We have certainly done our share of mentioning the deals and do's at Rorick Honda. But do you know that with every purchase of any new or used vehicle, you are getting the Rorick Advantage?
The Rorick Advantage. Oh. And what that means is free oil changes, PA state inspections, car washes, loaners, plus a new car engine warranty. Need we say more? As always, visit
Rorick.com for all of your vehicle needs. And now we start the Jagoff podcast, the 27th one today from Pinball Perfection.
In Westview, representing.
According to the Oxford Dictionary, the word Jagoff is defined as a noun, which means a stupid, irritating, or...
Here's how Pittsburghers define a word Jagoff. When someone cuts you off on a parkway.
Jagoff!
Or someone scares the out of you.
Yeah, Jagoff!
Or it's a term of endearment.
How you been, Jagoff?
This is Mark Madden.
Hi, this is Larry Richard.
This is Ken Wild Bill.
Hey, this is Kurt Angle.
Hi, this is Rocky Blyer.
Hey, it's Rick Seaback.
Hi, this is Greg Brown.
Hi, I'm Tyler Kennedy.
This is Santonio Holmes.
And this is the Jagoff Podcast.
So this is the Jagoff Podcast. If you're listening for the very first time or watching, make sure you go subscribe to the podcast. We hope you subscribe via the radio.com app, iTunes, or whatever. When you're on iTunes, we hope you go there and say something nice.
And don't if you're not.
Right.
Sorry. This is where we tell you what was on the blog all week. And hey, we're super excited. We find out pretty soon if our blog or our podcast did anything with the city paper. And I'm hoping for the blog's sake, because we've really been putting time into this blog.
The podcast never. We never put a second
here.
Into that.
No, we're here. No, this blog, this week, we actually talked about what's up, dog. Here's the story. My family was at Primanti's after my son's senior picture shoot, and we saw this adorable little dog that we thought was a stuffed animal, but it was a real dog in the best-looking bag I've ever seen. So we did a little story on taking your pets places.
You cleaned up on the blog this week
because you did
an excellent one, too.
Oh, I did. It was the Denora mayor. If you heard the story, the Denora mayor basically called out one of his official, like his workers, because the worker turned a leaf blower on his wife. You're really not supposed to do that. So we wrote him up as a Jagoff blog person.
Cool.
Because that's a Jagoff move, right?
All right, yeah. Sorry.
John was changing mics.
I was getting high signs from calling to say I'm loud, too loud.
So I babble.
All right.
And then we also have to tell you where we're going to be. So as we said, we just did the World Smile Day at Eaton Park. And we also have the one and only MVP, Santonio Holmes, coming to town next weekend to do his Strikes Against Sickle Cell event.
So anyways, on this week's podcast,
we get to talk to Dave, who is the owner. He's also a member of the band. Speaking of Santonio Holmes, his friend from 93.7 The Fan, who left 93.7 The Fan, Entercom, to go to the Pittsburgh Knights, which is like a calling made in heaven, because he gets to basically play games with Wiz Khalifa. That's his job. So we need to find out what else he does. But in addition, we have Corey Hirsch, who is Mr. Pittsburgh Ball Hockey. I mean, it doesn't get any better than Corey. You've talked to him. You want to dive a little deeper into this.
Well, it's more than Pittsburgh
ball
hockey at this point,
yes.
Is it? Because of him.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's bring up Dave, the owner.
Dave!
Dave! Everybody, Dave! Dave! Here, Dave!
Dan!
Oh!
So, John, ready to hit him with a few questions?
It's our first one.
What the heck is this place?
What the hell is this place? Yeah.
Oh, my God, it's amazing.
This is crazy.
It's a long lifetime collection of games that I found and restored over the years. Been at this like 40 years.
Wow.
Since I was a teenager, fixing them and yeah.
So no. You're like the Bicycle Heaven guy of pinball machines.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it does remind me of Bicycle Heaven. I walked in here and I was like, oh my goodness.
Oh yeah,
the nostalgia.
Craig's place is great.
Yeah. So, okay, describe for people who can kind of see from Facebook Live, but if they're listening to the podcast, how do you describe what you do? Someone says, Dave Dan, what do you do? And you say, I own Pinball Perfection. What can you say to them? That it's a warehouse, that it's a building, that it's a house of games?
Well, it's a collection of games from it's the history of pinball. You have, you know, from the 20s all the way up to present, and it's a very organized representation of all the different types of games that were made through mechanical up to, you know, early digital and then modern games, like some of the stuff. A rare game, stuff that were, you know, basically going to scrap, but it had to be restored. So there's games that have taken 20 years to restore. Just
Wow.
So, Dan, you just said games from 20 years ago. What did a pinball machine look like or work like 20 years ago versus now? I mean, obviously the electronics and things like that, but what were, you know, were they themed
like
back
then? Like a 1920s
then,
one. You know? How do you even?
Well, before 1948, they had no flippers, you know, so
okay.
They were basically gambling type games where you'd nudge the game around and you'd try to get it in some holes or score a certain amount of points. And then once the flipper became an option, it gave it a, it was a game of skill. It kind of switched. And then through the years, they had wood rails, and then they had wedge games, and then early mechanical, and then early digital, and then up to the modern stuff. Just it progressed like kind of like cars, you know, over the years.
Yeah, anything mechanical.
And the trick was always like bump it a little bit, but
absolutely.
If you bump it too much, it goes tilt. So what's the? Is it a hip thing? Is it a wrist thing?
Well, it's a combination of what you like,
okay.
But there's a little plumb bob in there shaking around, and if you go too far, it hits.
Is that what does the tilt
yeah,
thing?
It's
okay.
And then that's it. You lose your ball or your game.
So, Colin, that answers your question, because we were wondering, you start to see that there's rows and rows, right? When you come in here, there's rows of different pinball machine
yep.
games. And our question was, are they all the same concept, just different, you know, lights or topic or theme, but no, it's all a different kind of game, right?
Yeah, and the way we have them sorted is by the style they are. Like to this side, they're all Sega and Stern games, except a couple on the end, and then they're sectioned off into like Williams System 11, Bally, early digital, mechanical, Gottlieb mechanical, two-player, four-player, wedge games. They're all separated, you know, like a museum.
Just like a museum.
Yeah, so Sega, is that an early name? Like, you know, everybody knows the Sega games, but...
Like the gaming console.
It's a progression.
Right. Yeah.
Basically, Stern bought Chicago Coin Factory and created these Stern games. Then they made Data East games. Then later on, they made Sega games. Then they went back to Stern over the years. This is, you know, 20-some
yeah.
years progression, probably more than that now.
That's so cool.
Go ahead.
Stern's still making pinballs brand new today.
Okay.
We have some around here.
Now, Pittsburghers always have to be number one at something or first at something. Were we number one or first in pinball, anything as far as pinball?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
I mean, this
really?
Is the largest museum almost in the United States.
Take that, Cleveland and Baltimore.
Wow.
Yeah, they're building a really big museum in Las Vegas, $10 million building, Tim
yeah.
Arnold. We both started our museums back in the 80s collecting games, 70s, and
how does an art like that start? So essentially, I get it, you were a gamer, you liked it, there was an enthusiasm about it, but how do you start collecting such massive machinery, and where does it go?
Well, certain times there were games that were basically scrapped. I mean, they just had no use. The mechanical games had no use anymore. They were It's like, I'll trade you my flip phone for your smartphone.
Oh,
right.
Okay. It's like, no way, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. There was a bunch of games that were strip mines, burning them in piles. You couldn't trade them in. And I started getting those games for free, basically, to fix other games. And, you know, we're going to junk these. If you'll take them, please. And over the years, I collected games.
So the process was you would accumulate them, kind of tinker with them, figure out how to fix them.
Well,
you have to have a mechanical mind.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you got to learn how to fix circuit boards, which I learned circuit boards back in the 70s, actually.
Okay.
You know, I was very young soldering boards. At 17, I'm soldering boards.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
And is that an art? And I call it an art because you don't find, obviously, this is, you know, kind of an eclectic thing.
It's a dying art.
A dying art, yeah.
Definitely.
Is that what you're seeing, that there's not, you know, a lot of the younger people? Are they really that into the next stage of gaming?
I mean, they're. I have a group of people, I call them pinheads. They just gravitate towards pinball machines.
Okay.
And they've either found a game and now they have several games, or they just become, I have, you know, volunteers and people that just love to work on the games and help out. They'll do anything to be around a game.
This is so awesome.
It's super stimulating when you walk in. Right?
I know I don't want burglars. I don't think we have bad people listening to the podcast, but what do you think the most expensive game is you have in here?
Well, there's some rare games, but you've not even been downstairs. That's all 30s, 40s, and 50s games are downstairs.
Wow.
Oh my
gosh. That's all the wooden games from the early games.
Okay.
We've been moving them down there. This has all changed around in the last...
Wait, so wooden games didn't have flippers, I guess, right?
We have some without flippers, then the first flippers,
but the progression.
And the second. Yeah,
okay.
We have the whole progression.
Wow.
But
that's amazing.
Some of those are very rare, but there's games that were low production or only a few made, or, you know, like we have an Empire Strikes Back, which there's only two or three of them. It's a Star Wars game.
Like two or three in the world.
Yeah, there's not very many left. And that's
wow.
from Australia. But we have all the Star Wars and Star Trek games lined up, you know, that were made.
Did they always have a theme, like to a movie, you know, even back in the 20s or you know, the early games? That, or no, were they more like a circus theme,
well,
things like that?
Companies did pull licensed themes, or like there was way back in the, like, 48, there's a Cinderella game.
Okay.
You know, there, but then when the 70s hit, they started to really get on themes, you know, Close Encounters and, you know, Superman and
right.
just all these different themes, and that Stern took that on to where any game they would build had a licensed theme, where like Williams, they made, like, there's a Circus Voltaire over there. That's
okay.
a very obscure theme. It's not, you know, but they made a lot of games that were really good that had no license.
Did you notice that when, you know, everybody sort of went toward that Stan Lee phase, you know, when the comic book era happened again, you know, as you said, history repeats itself, right? Did you notice that there was an uptick in interest yet again? With does one sort of flow into the other as far as the following?
That's a good
that's
a good question.
It's not even on my sheet, Dan. Dave. It's not even on my sheet. I just came up with that. The
70s games have the comic book art, like Gottliebs and late mechanicals and early digitals.
Yeah.
So comic book guys really love those games just because of the artwork.
Yeah.
You know, they just have such great looking artwork.
Yeah. And I guess that's where my mind was going. So I think these kids who are now seeing comic books in a whole new way, right?
Yeah.
The Black Panther, the Iron Man stuff, all those kinds
of
things.
They make an Iron Man pinball.
Yeah, right. Okay.
It's awesome.
So we have to switch subjects in a second, because you're not only the guy that owns this, you're the band leader here. But so out of all the games here, which one would be your favorite?
Dan Dave.
Well, it's a matter of era, but I mean, like, there's a Lord of the Rings over there. Modern games, incredible games.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
And what makes it incredible, you know, like, because there's so many levers, or...
It's a total package. The artwork, the sounds, the playability, the theme. It was like...
Yeah.
That's what makes a game like Addams Family. That's the package.
I love the Addams Family. Oh, my
God.
We're on a cruise.
Games hit it.
Wow.
Terminator 2. I mean, it's like...
All right, one last question.
And you say... I'm sorry.
You say
total package, and you mean literally it's checking all the marks. Is
exactly.
that what you're saying?
Okay. Exactly.
Okay.
So, but it doesn't have to be the loudest one
no.
or the brightest light.
No.
But there's
just
a certain
right
few
stuff.
Components that are going
right
to go
stuff.
Into it. Okay.
Yeah.
Furthest somebody's traveled that you've met here?
Oh, people come from everywhere. I mean, Asia, Sweden, Australia.
Do you ship parts or in it? Like if someone has a broken pinball machine?
I used to. I mean, the business has changed. I mean, parts are kind of scarce. I sell off some stuff, but we keep what we need to keep the games running.
Wow.
You know.
All right, so you're the...
And you still do service them then? Not just...
Totally. Yeah, there's a whole restoration area downstairs.
Okay.
Working on my games and customer games.
Got it. But before... Before John asks another question, before you go on to the music part, you have a different kind of gig here, though. So people come on Friday nights, and explain what happens, because it's not just a museum at that point, right? There's another gig going on. People come and pay money, and they get to kind of just hang out. Is that right?
Well,
did Tracy do her homework?
They pay at the door, and you're in. You know, it's $12 at the door on Friday nights, and we'll have a band sometimes or an event. Like, we have Creepy Pinball coming up Friday before Halloween.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next event.
Okay.
That's not like a dating night. That's a Halloween night.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You see?
Right.
Creepy Pinball.
Got it. All right.
Oh, my God. And you do parties, right?
We used to do a lot of parties, okay. But now things are a little quiet.
Well, COVID,
you know?
Sure.
But
yeah.
You do socially distance for everybody
listening.
Absolutely. They should come. You do socially distance.
Yep. Yeah. Wear your mask.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, and as you know, we have to say, like, so we do a podcast every single week, and we like to find unique Pittsburgh locations. And I said, I'm so embarrassed to say, I literally live up the hill past this all the time and go, is that the cutest thing? And had no idea what I was getting into. So this is awesome.
If you're a Pittsburgher, you know, you always know directions of what used to be or what. So what used to be in this building, Dan? Do you know?
Like, this,
you know,
was built as a car dealer.
Okay. So it's on the S turn here
it's
in
Westfield.
It's
on Horseshoe Bend going toward.
It's in the Guinness World Book of Records. It's the only building on the major highway that you can drive into each floor from the
major
highway.
Is that right?
Yeah, you can drive in there. You can go around, drive in down there, and go around, drive in the basement.
Dude, that's awesome. And it's literally right across from Betsy Ann Candy's.
Yes, it is.
And next to the Love of My Life, McDonald's.
Who says that?
That's awesome.
Talk to us a little bit about the band, because we're certainly going to listen to your band today as well.
Well, the band is an interesting band because we're all in bands that are either disbanded, don't have gigs anymore.
Yeah.
We're all just dying to play.
Yeah.
So we're...
Here's your place.
We're like the COVID band.
The Pinball Orphans.
Right.
We're having a great time, and we're playing some good music.
I love it.
We're actually going to play some gigs out.
That's awesome. What kind of music? Are you a rock, classic rock kind of thing?
I heard some Doobie Brothers in the warm-ups.
Yeah. There's
China Grove is coming up, right?
Yeah, we might play that.
All right. Okay.
Well, we have a really good lead singer that's working a lot right now. He plays harmonica and sings.
So I love harmonica.
He's here. He's great, too. But we're all filling in, singing, and
okay, well, the good news is we're going to showcase one of your songs on the podcast today, and we're calling you. What did we say we're calling them? The Pinball Perfection.
The Pinball Orphans.
The Pinball Band.
No, John just made that up now. That's
the Pinball Perfection Band.
Yeah,
right?
We're the Pinball Band.
I love it. Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much for having us. Now, before you go, tell everybody, can we follow you online or on social media?
Yeah, on Facebook or at pinballperfection.com.
Love it.
That's the easiest way.
Awesome.
If you're coming home to Pittsburgh for a wedding, for a whatever you're doing, make sure you stop here.
Yeah.
Because this is very, very unique. You got to come in and see it.
For sure.
That was bad English. You have to come in and see it.
It was poor English, but all right, question of the day. This is the coveted question.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
You're not nervous?
No.
All right. Question of the day. John, I was sort of going to flip a coin. Do you see what I'm asking here? There's two different ways I'm going on this.
All right.
So I think I might just ask them both, but I can't find my question of the day, actually.
Right here. Candyland?
Okay. So would you pick Candyland or Chutes and Ladders if you were, like, first-time board game guy?
Candyland.
All right, what about Donkey Kong or Pac-Man?
Donkey Kong.
Okay. Why? Why is it so easy? And you're telling him. What's so great? Well, I knew that. I figured that out quick.
She knew what I was going to say.
Gotcha. Yeah. No, but you said it like so easily, like Candyland and Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for having us here. And we have a couple of guests we're going to talk to.
And then we can't wait to hear you again. Listen, this was one of my, like, best finds at the last minute because we were like, we need one more iconic-ish gamey guest. And my son comes in and says, Mom, check out this new website that Corey put up. And I was like, Corey, let me text Corey. So it was absolutely perfect because we have wanted to have Corey Hirsch on the podcast again because we had it all set up, Corey. We had Ryan Mill. We had, who's my boy, Colby Armstrong, and we were going to have you. And we thought, it's the ultimate hockey, and then COVID came. And
stupid
we were like,
COVID.
Stupid COVID.
Stupid COVID.
So then the gaming episode came, and we were like, we need to show different realms of gaming because, let's face it, there's just so many different spectrums for kids anymore.
Right.
You know, we get mad that the kids are on their handhelds. What are you going to do?
Fighting with my 5-year-old today.
Absolutely. But that's a part of today. But also a part of today is still getting out and playing sports. And you have basically conquered this one little part you have with a lot of people. We just want to, like, have you expand that story. I mean, welcome, first of all.
You've blown my mind twice today already, so I have to tell you that first. Number one, we are in, like, a living antique.
Isn't that crazy?
Which is amazing.
Did you hear him say it's in the Guinness Book of World Records?
No, I didn't hear that
part. Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I knew there was another place. There's another country club that's a pinball country club our friends had invited us to. Didn't know this one was so close, though, being on the north side. So
yeah,
it's pretty
crazy,
wild.
Right?
And then the second is it's National Smile Day.
Yeah.
So
World Smile.
World Smile Day,
yeah.
Which is even bigger.
Yeah.
My students would have been driven crazy had I known that today.
Because,
You know, last week we had Character Day at school. And I dressed up as Buddy the Elf. You know,
of course
smiling.
You did.
Oh,
Elf's
my God.
So I could have done
my
that
favorite,
again.
My favorite.
Corey! I know him!
I know him!
I smell like beef and cheese.
Yeah, isn't that cool, though?
Yeah, this is all cool. And then today being pretty special for us, too, USA Ball Hockey. Today we actually just released a scholarship giving out some cash to two players. Yeah, two kids who just recently graduated from high school and are going to college. And so it's one of my favorite times of year. We did it last year. Right outside of Team Pitt. We were able to do it over a pretty big weekend that we had last year in Pittsburgh. And so at the club championships. And then this year with COVID, stupid COVID, we had to just kind of postpone that too.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool for two kids to be able to make some money off of, you know, just writing an essay and doing great in school and giving back to the community. And honestly, that's kind of where we are with USA Ball Hockey is all about the entire country and trying to bring the entire country together for the first time to structure it. And to provide safety, which is definitely needed, whether it be code of conduct for how parents and players and coaches and referees are supposed to act, or to training them and to bringing in, you know, grade A training to let everyone who's been experienced, whether it be from the ice and have coached ball hockey or just done a lot of ball hockey over the years, be able to provide some feedback to coaches to show them the right way, not to just a 4 to 6 year old who needs to hold a stick properly, but what a forecheck is, what a back check is, what a neutral zone reset is, what gap control is. And so for that, all those things that we do on, that are done on the ice, how they tie into to ball hockey, we just want to kind of structure and bring that to the players so we have more players playing the game, getting closer to the Olympics, and then, of course, making sure we pay attention to the national team so that the national teams have good structure, too.
So, Corey, before we go much further, let's describe ball hockey is different than deck hockey because ball hockey can be played on a parking lot or whatever, but deck hockey is not always with a ball, right? So the ball hockey is ball hockey. We're it's not just deck hockey, right? It's not.
Yeah, so I just actually had a conversation. A guy from Ontario who's all about ball hockey has moved to a place in Connecticut, in Sanford, Connecticut, and they want to start ball hockey. They're all about ice in Connecticut. Many of the New England states are. And so when I had a conversation with him today around 4, he had asked the same question. What's the difference between deck hockey and ball hockey here in the States? I usually tell people deck hockey is twofold. It's played 3-on-3 on a 100-foot by 50-foot rink, very tight quarters. No rules, basically, other than, you know, infractions for penalties, but there's no offsides, there's no icing, such as that. About 50 years ago, a guy named Ray LeClerc started Mylec, which is a company that a lot of people wear their equipment. Everyone knows Mylec. And when he started it, he was selling surfaces, equipment, and a no-bounce ball. And he created a rule book that was different from the ice, where you couldn't cross. There was a center line offside. You couldn't catch the ball in one step. You couldn't hand pass in the defensive zone. Couldn't bring your stick above your shoulders. A lot of discipline went into those rules. So those are the two types of deck hockey: 3-on-3, and then the center line offsides, 5-on-5. Ball hockey is played all over the world. It's in Switzerland. They call it street. It's in Europe, other parts of Europe like Czech Republic and Slovakia, and so huge in those countries. And it's very similar to the NHL style of floating blue line where there's a neutral zone and you can implement strategies for forechecks and back checks, and you can hand pass in the defensive zone. You have larger rinks. Some are indoors, some are outdoors. And deck hockey is mainly played outdoors. So hopefully that answers.
Yeah. It's very good. And I think that...
I mean, he's no stranger to it because he watches the Rennebeck boys. So.
Right.
Yeah, Roman, be at practice tomorrow. He has a tournament.
And I think that your initiatives that we're about to talk about as far as growing this are just aligning with many things, like the Penguins, the foundation, have a new initiative about getting hockey out into diverse neighborhoods and trying to get kids interested in hockey at this point. So what you're doing, it kind of aligns with that, but the bottom line is for all of us hockey lovers, it builds a future. When I'm 90, I'll still be able to watch the kids that are 4 right now, right?
Yeah, so. A lot of ice hockey players who make it will tell you, too, that they started by learning how to play the game first and then skating separate, and then they put the two together at a certain age. Mm-hmm. And so now we're able to provide some more rules and structure to how we teach the kids at a young age so that they can prepare. One of our goals is, it's a long shot to do, but we're going to put the work in. We want to see an NHL player make it to the NHL one day and be able to say, I played ball hockey.
Yeah.
Because when you go to Canada, the CBHA and the Canadian Ball Association has been around for so long, they've got players like Jonathan Drouin, grew up playing ball hockey and now is a big-time player in the NHL for the Montreal Canadiens, or Alex Burrows, who just recently retired, had, you know, a Stanley Cup final goal once, and he's able to credit playing ball hockey. And we don't have that in the States. We want that. We need that. And so being able to try to show ice hockey programs that ball hockey is good for the player, good for the coach, I think is a start. And the NHL is well aware of how big this can be. They've called us recently and said, hey, we'd like to talk to you about your initiatives, what you're doing, and where you're going with your program on the USA scale, because our numbers have plateaued at the youth. It's the same demographic of people playing over and over again for the last 15 or 20 years. How do we get more kids to play? For them to get more kids to play or more kids to be interested in the game, try to tie it into ball hockey. So we're hoping that pretty soon the NHL can put us on their website and direct people to USA Ball Hockey when they want to find out, okay, which parts around the country can I play? Oh, there's ball hockey in Texas. Click on this button on our map on our website, and it'll take you to some locations in Texas that play ball hockey, or out in Orange County, California, or Seattle. And we're doing the job of connecting all of us together so that everyone understands that there are roles played nationally, and we can do it unified together and continue to have, like, a high school league we're shooting for in 2021. It's huge in New Jersey right now. We want it to be in Pittsburgh, Massachusetts, Chicago, and the like. Creating a national ball hockey league, which is something we were going to have launched this April, where you have organized men playing the game like you do on the ice, but you have it on feet and on surface. So.
And the thing is, the barrier to entry for a family of, you know, three kids or whatever is much lower than ice hockey, right?
Cost-wise?
Yeah.
And I think it's why they have that one demographic in the NHL, you know, the NHL is talking about that plays ice, because it's who can afford it.
Right.
Which family is lucky enough to be able to and works hard enough to earn their money. And then which families have, you know, a mom or a dad working two or three jobs to be able to pay it because they want to keep their kid happy. We know so many of those, but there's so many that can't play for that reason. And you're right. There's a bad stigma about ball hockey that it's poor man's ice hockey. And so we're trying to change that by being able to provide more structure to programs and tournaments and take out the negative of the dirty play that used to go on or the parents who just were causing problems and disturbances. And we want to make sure that we help to, because at the end of the day, it's all about the kids and getting them on the rink.
But
I admit I got in a big fight in deck hockey, ball hockey.
Please, we're
used to sports, right?
But there was a stigma for a while as you're talking about the cost of it. But it was also the whole fact that, oh, you're just a, right? Just a deck hockey player, just a ball hockey player. And, you know, Tracy, I remember when our kids were younger and Ryan, her son, was playing ice hockey, he started skating really young. I had multiple kids. I was like, I'm not doing that. So we sort of got to see that depending on what works for you, you can learn that discipline on feet to then turn around, like you said, and somehow they collide. But talk a little bit about how the Penguins are trying to kind of make the grow the game sport, you know, with us too, from a ball hockey standpoint. The way that they were doing the young guys on ice, they're coming to our organization at Team Pittsburgh and saying, hey, where does this start developmentally, and how do we integrate that into our Learn to Skate program?
Yeah, and the question even today, as I was talking to Don Gregory from Team Pittsburgh, who just spoke to some people who are now involved at the Penguins Foundation, they have a new turnover going on there, as you know. So their big question is how. What can we do for you? And so I think a lot of that is help to get the word out there that this is a sport that will benefit the ice hockey player. Help to get the word out there that this is a sport that is concrete and going to give players a chance to not – I mean, it could be like pinball. I saw like a tournament up there. When you play a sport, you're now building a new bond with a new group of people that you never, ever would have met in your entire life if you just sat home doing nothing or gotten in trouble in the streets, which a lot of my friends in this inner city of Pittsburgh grew up doing, getting in trouble. And sports kept me out of trouble. And this sport specifically has gotten me across the globe. I mean, I've seen Switzerland. I've been to Austria because of it. And whether you're just traveling around state to state or you're traveling around different areas of Pittsburgh, that might not be something you would do normally. And growing the friendships and the bonds that you have. Some of the guys that play hockey for us right now for the Pittsburgh Gods specifically that I coach, they were with us when they were 4, 5, and 6 years old on the Southside Market House at a gymnasium playing hockey. And, you know, I actually was able to officiate one of their weddings. Like that, you build a friendship and a family out of it. And to be able to provide something like that at more rinks across the country, whether it's in Orange County or Seattle or in Gloucester, Massachusetts, because there is a Gloucester, Massachusetts. Everyone thinks there's just a Gloucester, New Jersey, but there's Gloucester, Mass. Or Texas, Austin, Texas, then you're hopefully saving some lives and giving people a chance to have something to think about and memories to build forever and ever. And I think that's what's great about ball hockey is that it's affordable to do that.
Well, yeah. And we've grown it to a point where a Steve Gregory, who's ranked as one of the best of all time.
He's average.
Lives here. I knew you were going to say that.
Kidney's amazing.
No, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, so, you know, when I grew up playing hockey with nobody, you know, it was just the dad who knew a little bit about hockey that was the coach, right? The North Hills Hockey Association, all their mantra was, you have to learn how to skate before you ever do anything. Learn how to skate, 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 skate. And I remember having these discussions with Rachel.
And I got mad.
And, yeah, the fact is that the hand-eye coordination that is developed by ball hockey is so incredible.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you, as long as you can learn, like you said, the forechecking, the backchecking, the systems, yes, ice skating is a part of it and doing it second nature once you get there. But really, you can, Robbie Brown, you can fumble around in your skates all the time and have great hands.
Yeah, and that's every position, too. I was talking to a goalie coach yesterday, John Zarensky, who runs the Coach Z Foundation, and he brought a gentleman that he met through the sport, who was a Penguins goaltender coach back when Fleury was young. And so he's gotten to work with a lot of NHL goalies. He works in the ECHL, EHL, so strictly ice. And he brought him over to the deck and showing some kids ball hockey technique, you know, ball hockey players techniques that they should learn. Because you get a lot of parents who are coaches, which we need. But they're like, you know, telling their kid, get the glove up. And they don't understand what that means. So actually having a coach be able to explain to you or a trainer explain to you what it means to how to make a box, how to be square to the shooter. And this coach was telling me yesterday that he just played ice hockey for the first time in about a year. And the puck came at him in a straight line. And he's not used to that. He's used to being a ball hockey coach where you're outdoors, you're playing against the elements, and that ball dips on you. The wind takes it left or right, or there's a spin or there's a rotation because of the weight on it, and you have to be able to react really quickly. And he thought that playing ice the other day, this was his words, not mine, was a lot easier than playing ball because of that, because of the coordination that ball hockey's like.
You've
that's
said
just
that,
the goalies,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Yeah. I was going to ask you, as my final question is, you know, what's the biggest change you've seen in ball hockey equipment but I'd have to say, just from listening to you, the biggest change is it's organized now.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah. It's a serious sport.
There's a list of there's a long checklist to be an organized sport. Especially in this country, it's hard to do. But if you go on like TeamUSA.org, you'll see there are dozens of sports that are organized, from USA Tennis to USA Wrestling to USA Dance to USA Badminton, and they checked all the boxes. They became nonprofits. They generated an executive board with bylaws, with a plan. They have a rule book. It's straight across the country, across the map used. There aren't several different programs using several different books, and there's a registration program. So to be able to do all of that, it took some work, and we've been doing it for the last 2 years. Really, last year it's been in the limelight. Everyone's been able to see it, but it started 2 years ago with us doing all of this so that way we can be recognized as a sport on TeamUSA.org by this country and be the 12th country recognized in the world. It takes 20 to get close to the Olympic Committee. And if we can get close to the Olympic Committee, then we have a shot.
Okay.
Isn't that amazing?
And I love the fact that, you know, we were just asking Dan about, you know, all Pittsburghers like to be first or the best or whatever. And we're because of you and your team, Pittsburgh is leading this whole charge, at least for the United States part.
Yeah, there are a couple of people that work with us in our program at the executive level from Pittsburgh, but we, you know, our president Chris Banks is from Buffalo. Assistant director of hockey operations is on the board. She's fantastic. She runs the Women's Foundation, co-founder. She's from Massachusetts. Alessandra Glista, Tom Ruiz from New Jersey. So it's a collective group effort. I mean, Dan Colwell is a guy that I can speak for days about, who's running our marketing team. He works for the NHL Network and for Major League Baseball Network. You guys had him on last year, so he's helping us in the marketing side as interim. So and he lives out in the, you know, New York, Philadelphia, New Jersey area out in the East Coast. So, yeah, I mean, it is a collective group. But it took a couple of people from Pittsburgh like myself to say, hey, listen, let's connect the rest of the country together.
Well, and why wouldn't you? Because Team Pittsburgh, as we know, down there in the north side, the Brighton Heights
it's
area.
It's the best.
It is. Literally, if you want your kid to be super good and super well trained, it's amazing the systems that are. It's not like super serious if you're like, oh, my God, I don't want my kid to. But it is competitive to the point that kids actually learn the game versus just, again, they're just running around like Keystone Cops.
Where do we find you on the internet, on social media, all that good stuff?
Yeah, so the best place to go, especially now because registration is opening this month. We're trying to launch it this weekend as soon as we work out those last technical difficulties. So usaballhockey.com, become a registered coach, referee, player, parents to support the cause for going to the Olympics and getting organized across the board. And there's a list of what you get in return, but there's also us on social media. Our social media team with Ian Gordon and Dan Colwell do a great job. So anything at usaballhockey.com, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
And there's all kind of information there for people to get involved, to understand it. Yeah, awesome.
All right, so we're going back to the basic games here.
All right.
Do you like Candyland or Chutes and Ladders?
Candyland.
Donkey Kong, Pac-Man.
Pac-Man. I would still play Pac-Man.
Life or Monopoly?
Monopoly.
Yeah? Cool.
Yeah. Are you I don't think I've ever finished a full game.
I've never played Life. Isn't that crazy?
Most games, yeah. You just kick the hotels off and I'm done.
Yeah, seriously.
So, cool.
Corey, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Anytime,
we really appreciate
thanks for doing what you guys do.
So, you know, as I said when I greeted him, and I even threw out the 93.7 The Fan thing, but that's where I met you, was at Entercom, and you had, well, you attended school at the same school as Santonio Holmes when we brought him to 93.7 The Fan. So, I mean, it was that easy that's how we met. We did a couple of auctions together. We worked together on a little bit of marketing and maybe some sales stuff. And then he was like, oh, and by the way, I'm getting married and I'm leaving. And I was like, oh, this was a great relationship, Eric. Okay, bye-bye.
It was nice knowing you. Nice to see you. And by the way, I'm gone.
Yeah, and then I see Eric Bentley now works for the Pittsburgh Knights. And I was like, I've heard of that before. And I looked it up, and wow, I mean, it is just taking Pittsburgh by storm. So obviously you knew, first of all, welcome. But you knew about this, obviously, before you went over. What was it about the Pittsburgh Knights that intrigued you? And explain a little bit for people who don't know what it is, exactly what it is in a nutshell.
So the Pittsburgh Knights, we are the official professional esports team of Pittsburgh. We are officially recognized by the city of Pittsburgh as the professional esports team of Pittsburgh. So we are the one and only.
Yeah. And esports is.
Yeah.
So esports is, that's a tough question.
Sure.
So it is, in a nutshell, professional gaming. And that can take a few different forms. So it's not one specific game that our professional athletes compete in. In fact, under our banner of the Pittsburgh Knights, we actually operate in 7 different rosters. So we operate 7 different rosters in 7 different games. However, you know, normally when you think about esports, a lot of times people think about League of Legends or Overwatch League, Call of Duty League.
I was
like
thinking
that.
Of like Madden and all that. Kind
Madden.
Of
so okay. we actually do have a professional Madden player that plays under our banner.
Okay.
So for us, we have again 7 different rosters in games like Rocket League, Smite, Rainbow Six Siege. There's another game, Gears 5, that we also operate in. And one of the great things about esports is it's a borderless, it really is a borderless industry. So, for instance, while we are here rooted in Pittsburgh, we like to say we take the Manchester United approach to esports. We do have a very strong local, roots here in Pittsburgh, but we have a global fan base. Our fans really are rooted here in Pittsburgh. However, our Gears 5 team operates in the Latin America region. They're based in Mexico City.
Right.
And the great thing about that is, and this is one of the things I learned when I actually joined the Pittsburgh Knights, in Mexico and in Mexico City, one of the things we learned when we picked up this team was in Mexico, and we picked up the team, and we actually instantly became the most followed esports franchise in Mexico because in Mexico, the number one NFL franchise followed merchandise sales, the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Who didn't know that one?
Because we are aligned with, we have a strategic partnership with the Steelers. So when there's not a global pandemic happening, we actually operate out of the Steelers' marketing offices. So marketing and sales offices. Yes, we have a strategic partnership with the Steelers. We have an investment partnership with the Steelers. So
I did my homework. You could read it.
Yes. So with that partnership, and because we do fly the black and gold, you know, the same colors as the rest of the professional sports franchises here in Pittsburgh, that was one of the things we found was we picked up this Gears team in Mexico, operating out of Mexico City. They instantly became the most followed esports team in Mexico.
So and you're going to have to stay for an hour, okay, because we have a million questions. But first, I heard, like, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys is one of the biggest investors in esports or something like that. Because he's so we'll get to that in a second. But so tell me.
Are you going to ask him if he knows him?
I don't know Jerry.
So you go out and you find a team of people that are good at a game, an esport.
Yep.
You hire them.
Yes.
And you pay them to play the sport.
Yep.
In the
as a team, as a competitive team.
Absolutely. Okay. So what happens with that is we actually have an esports consultant. He acts as our general manager.
Of course you would,
He is our Kevin Colbert.
Okay.
A guy by the name of Garrett Bambro. He is phenomenal. He's actually a former professional Counter-Strike player
that
was brought on. He was actually on staff when I joined. And it is his job. Again, he acts as our GM. He would be our Kevin Colbert that goes out and he vets all of our players. He's our talent finder. He goes and, you know, scouts all of our players, signs them on to our rosters.
Stop there. Where is he finding them and where does he watch them?
So he will go most of the talent scouting happens on Twitch. So
okay.
So Twitch streams are...
Oh, yeah. We know the term, at least.
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, Twitch is where most esports happen. You'll either find it on Twitch or YouTube. Those are the main streaming services. There are a couple other streaming services like Caffeine, but those are really secondary. But really, Twitch and YouTube are where most of the esports are streamed.
Okay.
And he'll go and he'll find these. Now, he has a very deep-seated knowledge of the esports industry. Like I said, he's a veteran player. You know, he's been a professional for a very long time. So he has a lot of already established relationships. So he knows the players already. And he just has an eye for talent. So he can go out, find these players, even if it's not in a game that he's extremely familiar with.
Sure.
He's able to go out and scout the players. You know, he was able to go out and pick up, for instance, our current Rocket League roster that we have right now. He was actually able to go out, find these players. He understands the games well enough that he knows when he sees a good roster, is able to find them, pick them up, bring them on. And, you know, right now we have one of the better Rocket League rosters out there. They're currently today competing in the North American Regional Tournament that's happening right now. I was actually just following it as we're competing. So
it's like coolest job ever. I feel like John's leaving. So I'm about to put out a help wanted for a co-host because he's out.
I want to know, so what do you do? We didn't even ask you what you do. Your marketing or your sales?
So my job,
are you Kevin Colbert?
There's no beer vendors. I know that. I can't. Right?
No. Unfortunately, no, there was.
And you took scalpers out of the game, right? There's no scalpers.
No, my official title is Corporate and Strategic Partnerships Manager.
Okay.
Same.
Sales is basically what it is. So what I do is I work with our corporate partners, our corporate sponsors. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm in charge of going out and finding corporate sponsors for the teams because really there are two revenue streams that help keep us alive. One is working with the game developers themselves because that's really what makes esports possible, and that's what the esports environment was built for. You know, the leagues exist because game developers want us to help promote their games. So Rocket League is a league because the developer Psyonix wants us to help promote their game Rocket League. So they set up a league for us to compete in, and then in turn, because they have these leagues that we compete in and broadcast, we're helping them promote the game.
It's like the Penguins and the Learn to Play.
Exactly.
Right.
It's just...
And speaking of, Evgeny Malkin is one of their...
Evgeny Malkin is one of our investors as well.
John, read your show notes.
I know, I saw it. Look, she just yells.
So that's also what Garrett does as well. He works works with the developers in order to, you know, secure that portion of the revenue stream that comes in. And then the other portion of the revenue stream are our corporate sponsors that we work with, which is what I do. So I go out and I work with our partners, you know, partners like PNC and Sheetz and those partners that we've brought on that, you know, become our champion partners that ride along with us, that, you know, really have and the partners that do come on with us, they're really at the forefront of the industry. They're the ones that have realized that the demographic that we serve are the future.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to add. This has to be the toughest sell in the world at this point, because when I go to the PPG Paints, I know the steps are sold. I know, you know, I can have my logo on the steps. I can have my logo on this sign. But where is my sponsorship displayed, or how is it carried out?
Our sponsorships are sold in a few different places, because we always say we don't have a physical arena to sell. But we sell in a few different places. First and foremost, if you ever see our players, whenever they're on stream, they're wearing our jersey. And on our jersey, we proudly display our corporate sponsors.
Okay.
So if you ever watch, European soccer matches.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's how,
thing.
Racing, car racing.
All of our champion partners are displayed on our jerseys.
Okay.
We also sell them within our stream, so we have graphical overlays where we'll display our corporate partners, but we also integrate our partners into our creative content. So we actually create content on the side, whether it be content series, where we do looks behind the curtains, almost. So, for instance, we actually have a team in a game called Smite. So this game, it's actually a 10-month season. It happens in Atlanta, Georgia, where we actually get a house for the team. They live in Atlanta, Georgia, 10 months out of the year. We have a videographer that lives in the house with them, captures content. Think the real world, but with gaming, where we put out a monthly content series called Virtue.
Dude, your family could
It's Big Brother. Yeah, my family
is really
all over. Yeah, they watch Big Brother.
You should put a camera in the Renovac house.
Thanks for trying to get me a job.
Absolutely. But at the same time, we're able to work with our partners to do product placement for them.
Right.
We're able to work with, for instance, hardware companies where we can place their hardware.
Right.
You know, either it's headsets on our players' heads, keyboards, mice, things like that.
It's just reinventing the old game of awareness, branding. Yeah.
And one of the things that we've realized, especially in the past 6 to 7 months, and one of the things that have sort of given us a leg up right now on traditional sports, is right now, traditional sports, while they've started back up, because back in March, traditional sports had to hit the pause button. We did not.
Yeah.
Right.
So we actually kept churning out content. We were able to still serve our partners while traditional sports were not. So a lot of traditional corporate partners started coming to us in order to serve them.
Yeah.
We were able to work with a lot of traditional corporate partners that were going, they just could not be served by traditional sports.
Yeah.
They came to us.
And what's the demographic you're trying to hit?
I'm sorry?
Demographic.
Your demographic
you're trying to hit? A lot of the demographics that we work with are the millennial and Gen Z demographic.
Okay.
So these are the demographics that, corporate partners would look to, that they want to get in young. They want to get those first-time buyers.
Sure.
So if you're
keep them locked in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if you're an insurance company and you want to get somebody that's going to be a first-time buyer, but they're going to be a lifetime customer.
Rory Conda.
Exactly. So maybe if it's Rory Conda and they want to get somebody that's going to buy their first car there, and all of a sudden they're going to buy every car for the rest of their life.
Yeah, yeah.
You're serving that young demographic and getting them for the rest
of
their life.
Eric, how crazy is
this?
Listen, you're boggling my mind here, really. And I'm not blowing smoke, but
I picked a really good guest is what's happening right now.
This is amazing.
Listen, we heard there was a gaming one, and I was like, call Eric Bentley.
This is so crazy. Well, this is amazing. Because, when Rachel, we were talking about this before we came here, I had it completely wrong. Because I knew, Jerry Jones was involved, and I said, it's like they get Madden players because there's no cost to it. That's wrong. There really are humans involved in this. And I didn't realize how
far this goes. And that is a common misconception.
Yeah.
Well, and there are a lot of common misconceptions about esports. And we really try to break those common misconceptions, especially through those content pieces that we were talking about.
Yeah.
Because the biggest misconception about esports is that it's the guy, the out of shape, overweight guy sitting in his basement, in his mom's basement,
in his
Cheetos,
yeah.
just doing nothing,
yeah. Right.
Playing games.
Right. Yeah.
That is the most incorrect statement somebody could make.
Right.
Our athletes are true athletes.
Athletes.
They are professional athletes. They actually take care of themselves. They go through, you know, physical fitness regimens because one of the things they have to do is they have to be able to keep up stamina. You know, they play for 8 to 10 to 12 hours at a time.
Sure.
And in order to be able to keep posture, to be able to keep up their stamina, to really prevent repetitive stress injuries as they're playing, they have to be able to take care of themselves. You know, health and wellness is a huge part of esports, and people don't really realize that. So all of our players, when you look at a typical esports athlete, they are usually a picture of health.
Yeah.
And not that typical picture
of somebody
sitting around.
That's the thing. Here, smile real quick there. I'm going to take a picture. There you go.
That's what we do here. That's a really good picture.
You're going to be our intercom picture right there.
There we go.
They'll be so glad to see you.
Oh,
I'm
God.
Sure.
Eric, you have to keep us updated on, because the Steelers, the Penguins, the Pirates, everybody, you have to come in and be that person that keeps us in touch with what's happening here.
Absolutely. I would love to.
Yeah, you know. But there's also something, Sheetz, speaking of sponsors,
yes. Is
sponsoring something that you're doing on the 10th, right? Is there an event that's on the 10th? No? I was on your website.
Read your notes.
I will, John. Boomer Bowl.
The Boomer Bowl.
I mean,
yes,
come on. I can't beat it any better.
Yes. the Boomer Bowl.
I was like
so
kicking
actually,
you.
I'm glad you brought that up because the Boomer Bowl is such an interesting event that we're doing. So, yes, Sheetz is actually the presenting partner of our Boomer Bowl.
Yeah.
And that is an interesting take on a game that is taking the esports scene by storm.
Okay.
So the game is Valorant. So Valorant is one of the newest, hottest games out there right now. It is a game that is sort of a take on one of the classic esports, which is Counter-Strike. So Counter-Strike is one of the original esports.
Okay.
And what the developer Riot Games has done is they've taken this concept of two teams, one team trying to plant a bomb on different bomb sites, another team trying to defend against that, and they've interspersed different elements of, I guess the best description of Valorant is Counter-Strike mixed with Overwatch, only a little harder,
okay.
A little bit more difficult.
Okay.
If I could describe it in that way. And yeah. I know the people that I work with
are
going to lose their minds trying to describe it in a way.
Because they're
going to be like, guys, it was for the old people. I was just explaining a little bit.
But no, Valorant is it is truly the hottest game right now in the gaming and esports scene. And what has happened is we've been able to host a couple different tournaments in Valorant where we have seen huge amounts of engagement, huge amounts of viewership. So when we were talking about, okay, we've hosted these tournaments, we've seen the viewership, we've seen the engagement, what can we do to be just a little bit different?
Right.
So our tournament organizer and our event organizer, Jasper Coe, what he did was he came up with this idea that we should have veteran players that are
boomers,
28 or older. Now, he uses the term boomer for 28 or older, which kills me.
Yeah.
Because I'm like,
dude, I'm 44. I'm not a boomer.
I'm
41.
Yeah. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm not a boomer. Are you kidding me? Like, I'm not that old. So it is. The idea behind that was the younger players nowadays, their reaction time, their reflexes,
right. They're
just so fast.
Oh, sure.
That a lot of the veteran players
can't keep up.
Sure. So we wanted to host an event for veteran players that they can go out and actually compete against each other. So it's going to be a fantastic event.
I love it.
And where will people watch it?
So it's actually going to be hosted on our Twitch.
Okay.
It's going to be on our Twitch.
See, I threw you a plug, bro.
Yeah. twitch.tv/nights. Go there on the 10th and 11th. For the Boomer Bowl, it's going to be phenomenal.
I love it.
Eric, this has been
It will continue. You know, John's going to give you the old, you're coming on every quarter about something.
Can I get your email address? Because I have a million questions.
I have it.
Can I get your cell phone number? I'm calling you.
Anytime.
Anytime. I love
it. Eric Bentley, you are awesome.
Where does everybody follow so that we can?
So, you can actually go to our website. It's knights.com. knights.gg, K-N-I-G-H-T, so yep. like Knights in Shining Armor, right. knights.gg, or on Twitter, at knightsgg.
Got it. All right, big game. This is going back a few years. Chutes and Ladders or Candyland?
You know what? Chutes and Ladders.
Really?
Yeah.
I was never a Chutes and Ladders person.
Absolutely.
Of course, you do get to, like, push people, so that's kind of cool. Yeah. What about Donkey Kong or Pac-Man?
It's got to be Donkey Kong just yeah. because that was the original appearance of Mario before he was Mario because he was called Jumpman in that game.
How about stealing a real car or Grand Theft Auto?
Where did that come from? He's not reading
well, you know
the
what,
notes.
You know what? I can't say what neighbor. I can't say where I grew up.
You didn't grow up here, though, right?
No, I didn't grow up here. Yeah. I didn't grow up here. I can't say what town I grew up
in. Okay.
Grand Theft Auto now.
I love it.
Eric, thank you so much. It's so good to reconnect with you.
We got to thank Dan for hosting us.
Not Dave, Dan.
Yes, yeah. right, exactly. For once, you actually got the name wrong.
It's like,
that's my thing.
He's like, my name is Dan.
It's like, that's my thing to ruin a person's name, right? Yeah, and of course, thanks to Corey Hirsch.
Oh my gosh.
The ball hockey thing is so great.
And Eric Bentley from Pittsburgh Knights. This was awesome.
Yeah,
this was like
totally
the best
cool.
thing ever.
And of course, thanks to Colin. Thanks to Tracy. This is one of the first things she organized.
Yeah. She found this place.
Right. She crushed this. Right. Well, she hangs out here every Friday for $10. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's $12.
Don't
but
tell her
there was
husband.
Inflation after COVID.
Right, don't tell her husband. All right, and of course, thanks to Rory Conda.
We have certainly done our share of mentioning the deals and the dues at Rory Conda. But did you know that with every purchase of any new or used vehicle, you are getting the Rory Advantage?
That means lifetime free oil changes, PA state inspections, car loaners, and washes, plus a new car engine warranty. Need we say more, right?
All of your vehicle needs.
Where? Rorik.com.